Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento. Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 254. My name's Turner Sparks.
I am Michael Kaplan of Kaplan America fame.
Oh!
Look at that. That's my handle.
Immediately. You About can time. Find me at Turner Sparks on Instagram. You can find me at the Alameda Comedy Club in Oakland, California this weekend, December 3rd and 4th. You can find me on the road all next year. And I'm recording my album at the Friars Club in New York City, February 4th. So come on out to that. 2022, I'll be recording my second album. Come to that. Kaplan will be there. All the who's who will be there. We're trying to get some of the bunker celebrities out.
Some of the patrons, some of our bunker celebs. Yeah, well, it's going to be follow along. Lost in America Pod on Instagram and Lost in America Pod on Twitter for all. We'll be updating it on there as well. So
exactly. TurnerSparks.com. You can find Kaplan, as he said, at Kaplan America on all social media platforms. Kaplan, on the podcast today, we're talking about Sudan. And also, I think we'll probably get into South Sudan, because when you get into Sudan, why not? You know,
you just dive right in, do them both. We don't get do two for the price of one often, but this week we might do it.
Well, rarely we don't get to do Africa episodes that often, just in general, countries in Africa. So we do South Africa, but I think this is the furthest, besides South Africa, this might be the first one, right?
This is one of our furthest. There's not that much going on in Africa, I guess, is what we've. No,
I think they got stuff going on.
I'm joking.
It takes time to get around. So we have Akau Jambo, on the show today. He is a comedian from South Sudan, going to be telling us about. There's a coup. So what happened was, well, before we get into all that, there's a coup in Sudan. So we want to talk about that. But yeah, before we get into that, Kaplan, for $5, people say, I love your show. How do I give you money? They say that to me all the time.
Often
walking down the street, they stop me in the middle of the street. They say, I give you money. Well, what you do is you do what Miller Zerfast did this week.
Miller Zerfast.
And you give us money on patreon.com/lostinamerica. Miller Zerfast, our newest Patreon subscriber.
Oh my God. Thank you, Miller.
$10 a month he came in at, which means Miller's going to get a T-shirt, going to get a Lost in America Live from the Bunker T-shirt, number one in Armenia, T-shirt. And also, I think we're going to give Miller an ad. Here's why. Miller, I'm going to tell you why, Cap. Miller came in on November 30th, and you get charged the day you come in, but then you also get charged whenever the next month starts.
So he's getting double charged, Miller.
So he got charged $20, like bang, right out of the gate. So I think we're going to have to connect with Miller and say, hey, you unknowingly gave us
$20. That was his plan. Yeah, I would do it the other way. I would wait till the first to do it. That's my advice if you want to be cheap
and then
like
you
me.
Get a full month. Yeah.
But, you know, thank you, Miller. That is, we're going to give you an ad. Yeah, we definitely, we're the type of, we care about our customers that way. So good idea.
We're not here to scam anybody.
No, this is all about quality. We like to give you good episodes two or three times a week. We give you full throttle comedy podcasts about our life in America. And, you know,
now you're talking about Live from the Bunker right now, aren't you?
Right, which he just subscribed to.
Yes, for $10 a month. So for $5 a month, you get us, Kaplan and I, doing our half-hour comedy podcast 2 to 3 times a week. The reviews are off the charts over there. People love it. and then for $10 a month, you get a T-shirt. For $20 a month, you get your own ad once a month on this show. Miller, we're going to connect with you and give you your ad, Kaplan. And then you can also give us more than that. You can give us $30, $40. You know, Dennis, the great Dennis Owens is up north of $30 a month.
Hey, let's not push Miller. He doesn't have to. He gave us enough right now, but other people.
Oh, I mean, other people get in the game. Beat out. It's hard to beat the best lawyer in Kansas City at both sides.
I got to say one last thing. It's a great name, Miller Zerfass. I might steal that. I write a lot. I write aliases for myself. You know, I might become Miller Zerfass in a future short story.
It is a good name. It's your Hank Chinaski.
I've been looking for my new Hank Chinaski. Exactly. Yeah. So stealing that, Miller.
Miller Zerfass. Kaplan, now let's talk about Sudan. Right. What I know with Sudan is not much. I'll be honest. I got the COVID vaccine, the booster shot yesterday.
Booster excuse.
And I
knew tell my dog get my homework.
I have been out of it. I was barely awake. The worst night's sleep last night, and I have nerve damage, and then they give you this shot of juice. I can feel it in every single nerve in my body right now. So it's brutal. So anyway, you start. What do you know?
So people should get boosters, but they shouldn't get them the night before a big exam is what you're saying. First off.
Yeah, you can't study. Yeah.
No, well, what I know is that, you know, we've done some research, obviously, but they did they had a dictator for about 30 years.
Sudan.
In Sudan. Yes, we're talking about
and
Sudan.
He was like an Islamic. Is that the word? Islamic dictator or hardcore?
I mean, I don't know if even he was, but I mean, does a religion even matter when they're a dictator? I just dictator. So you want him out. But yeah, he was an Islamist.
Well, no, it matters because it matters. I think there were laws, like there's a lot of anti-women laws and what they were allowed to wear and what they weren't allowed to wear and all that stuff. So don't dance around it. It matters.
All right. I'm trying to be PC. But yeah, so there was an uprising 2 years ago.
You don't
ago.
Have to be PC when a dictator's involved. Kaplan.
I don't want to offend the dictator.
I understand that you don't. Yeah, you don't want to offend the great dictators of the world.
But anyway, so they got him out. There was a popular uprising. It seemed like after 8 months of this, the military said, we're going to jump on the bandwagon. And they joined the coup. They joined, not a coup. It's not a coup when it's uprising. They joined. They knocked this guy out. They worked out some sort of power sharing plan. And for a couple of years, this was working towards they were going to have elections.
This was in 2019. We're talking about.
And they've never really been a democracy in the country. This is, again, one of these countries that Britain screwed up. It used to be English. Anyway, so and they said, we're going to have elections in like 2022. And then that got pushed back to 2023. And then in a few weeks ago, on October 25th, there was an actual coup. The military.
Can I just pause you for a second?
Yeah.
Because you definitely know way more than I know about this. But I think the explanation's getting a little off here. So I want to slow down because I'm already lost about what you're talking about. So I think let's make it simple here. There was a coup in the military took over the country in 2019. They took it from the dictator. The dictator had been there 31 years.
Yeah.
Yay, everybody's happy. The dictator's gone. Okay.
Right.
And then, but then immediately you have to now plan a new country. And there was
the
two
part.
Or three factions. There was the military.
Right.
The Sudanese military who also was involved in overthrowing the dictator. There was just the people on the street and they had elected some guy or they kind of pushed like their leader in to become the prime minister of the country. And then there was the warlord who had raped and pillaged all over the place. And now he was excited.
He wanted to see the table. Yeah.
And so these are the three sides. You have the warlord. you have the military, and you have the people's champion.
Right.
And those three are now trying to work out stuff.
And it was, yeah, it was a real big tent, is what you're saying. So, of course, it didn't really work so well because the military guy and his people had a coup like a month ago, and they arrested the people's champion guy. They put him under house arrest.
Wait. Stop again. So after now, maybe it's just because my brain doesn't work.
Yeah, I don't know.
Again, you skipped ahead. So after 2 years of them trying to figure it out, it finally collapsed a month ago. Right?
It collapsed a month ago. Yeah, they put the prime minister under house arrest. And then what's interesting here is, you know, we hear about coups all the time, but the people didn't stand for it. The people then took to the streets and protested again for the past month. They've been protesting. Then the military killed a bunch of civilians. And so finally, it looks like they've worked out a deal to bring the prime minister back. He came out of his house. He shook the other guy's hands.
I think the headline here is the prime minister got kicked out a month ago.
Yeah.
And then he's the people's champion. He got booted. The military booted him a month ago. And then now the same military that kicked him out a month ago put him back into power. Now, Cal Jambo, welcome to the show, man. That was a total mess. I'm barely alive. Kaplan's talking fast. I think it's coffee time over there. How did we do? How are you doing? Welcome to the show, man. I know you're in South Sudan. They're two different countries, but we did ask you and you said you knew something about this story. So,
yeah, I got to give it up for Kaplan, man. He knows a thing or two. Actually, he knows a lot. It's just that there's some bit of like shaping to whatever he knows, but he's not far from the truth.
Not far from the truth. Thank you.
Yeah, it's the same people. We are all Sudanese people. We were all under the same operation by the same dictator for nearly 25 years. We only got our independence in 2011. So that's when we broke out from the Sudanese region and we became South Sudan. And then they kept the Sudanese region. So we relate to whatever they were going through. And speaking of the uprising, the agreement that they actually have was signed in South Sudan. Like, we know about that agreement. It was signed in Juba here. It's called Juba Peace Talks, the one that they were operating on. That's the one that happened in 2019, yeah?
Oh, so they signed that in South Sudan.
There you go. Sorry.
Yes, they signed it in South Sudan. So in what happened in 2019 is, after a long struggle of oppression from the Sudanese dictator, Omar al-Bashir, an uprising was caused, and the uprising was sparked by, it was a lot of issues that built up for a very long time, for over 30 years, but it was sparked by the economy, the price of bread. Things had become so expensive. Now, Sudanese and South Sudanese love bread. Our staple food is bread. Like, we use bread to eat food. Like, exactly. So the price of bread had gone up so high, like it was so expensive that a normal person could not afford it. And then in one of the towns outside Khartoum, the capital city, there was people took it to the streets and complained about that. And then slowly this just sparked the rest of the issues that everyone was going through. And from there, people just went to the streets the first night and it looked like they were going to go home, but they weren't going home. They just kept on saying, we need to get this economy back on the street, back on the right track. We need change. We need everything. And then the next thing you realize, it's a whole country that's on the streets and staying and sleeping on the streets and demanding for the president to be overthrown for another leadership, yeah? So this, and they were demanding for civilian leadership. They were demanding for the rights of the people, all these oppressive rights, to move the country from an Islamic state to like a right of religion and all that. One of the reasons why we left South Sudan is because we weren't identifying with an Islamic state. We were like, everyone has the right to be any religion, but Sudan didn't want that. So they advocated for that. And it reached a point where they weren't going home. They were on the streets for almost 3 months. And the only thing they had to do is to sit down with the military, for the civilians to sit down with the military and overthrow the president and come up with a government that is going to lead the Sudanese people to elections in 2022. So the agreement was they're going to have 4 years. This agreement was patroned by our president, like South Sudan, like they watched it and they were the witnesses. The agreement was they were going to have 4 years of that, an interim 4 years to lead them into elections. In these 4 years, 2 years were going to be led by the military, and it's going to phase from the military. It was a process of giving back the power to the citizens, like to take it away from the military and give it to the citizens and all that. So the agreement was the military was going to have a president, and then the prime minister was going to be a civilian. Yeah. And so the civilian was basically handling the issues of the government, but it was a transition phase to remove everything from the military to the civilian. So this year was actually the end of the 2 years of the military. From this year, everything was supposed to be handed to the civilians, and then the civilians will lead it to an election, and then everything becomes decided at the ballot. But what happened this year, I think the military became greedy. They saw themselves losing and all that, and this is where they attempted the coup. It was actually a real attempt. They first did the first attempt, they failed, then they attempted again the second time. And it's what I would like to call a failure as well, because it didn't go as they had planned. So they took the prime minister, put him on house arrest, and people went back to the streets because people were like, we demanded, we fought for this power to go to the civilians. The military can't take it back. They demanded for the prime minister to be released. They went on the streets. A lot of people were killed. But the Sudanese people are so, so resilient. They never give up. They kept on pushing and pushing and pushing, until the military found itself in a position where these people are not going back. They need to compromise. They need to reinstate this person, because their own condition was reinstate him and we go back, like we want a civilian government. So they had to reach a point where they had to release all the political prisoners and come to an agreement with the civilian government, with the prime minister who was arrested. But of course, there's so many people who did not agree with the prime minister sitting with the military, because most of these people are saying the military should go, but it's impossible for the military to just go like that. So politically, the prime minister handled the issue politically by sitting with the military and coming up with an agreement that will extend them back to the elections in the next 2 years. Yeah.
So when the prime minister who was put in by the civilians wanted him, when he went into the military, yes, coup, the military took over, they put him into house arrest.
Yes.
And now they let him back out of house arrest, and he's just kind of back being the prime minister, but he has to work with the military. The same people who arrested him, he now has to kind of work for them. Is the problem that he's doesn't have power anymore? Is that what the people think? That really he's just kind of a puppet and the military does what they want?
That's what the people think, but the people forget that the power is theirs. They have the power. The fact that they made the military change their mind, it means that they're very powerful. But again, the common man cannot handle the issue. If it's up to us, we're just going to be like, hey, you go, let this person take over. But again, politically, a country needs a military, and a country needs a president and a prime minister and all that. Yeah. So at his level as a prime minister, he understands how he's supposed to execute this, but he still remains a civilian leader. And this agreement, of course, he thinks it's something that's going to work, and it's going to lead them to the elections that they're going to. But there is no way they can work without the military, and the military cannot work without the prime minister. It's a compromise.
Yeah, that makes sense, because you can't, if he then becomes like the, if, sorry, what's
his name's name? Hamdok, right?
Is that who we're talking? The Prime Minister Hamdok.
Yeah, Hamdok. Yeah,
if he gets in and he boots the military out, well then congratulations, you're a country without a military.
Yeah.
That's not very
good. Ethiopia takes over now.
Yeah, that's not very good either. I'm curious, what's the relationship? It seems like Sudan and South Sudan are still very, obviously you only became a country in 2011. So
the world's newest country, right?
Is and what's the relationship between the two? Meaning, is one country wealthier than the other? Is one country more stable than the other? How do they work together? Yeah.
So, but actually, Barbados is the newest. Just got its independence yesterday or 2 days ago.
Which country?
Yeah.
Barbados?
Barbados.
Barbados.
They won a country before?
Screw you. No, they were under the British rule.
I refuse to recognize them. Because we have never had any from Barbados on this podcast.
We've never gotten to number one in Barbados, but we're about to go to number one in Sudan. So.
Do you know Rihanna?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's from Barbados.
Oh, I've been to Barbados then. I've seen her house. I went there on a cruise one time. for like an hour.
Yes, yes. We've
been there. You guys have a Luol Ding, so
I still don't believe it exists. I'm more of a South Sudan guy myself. So, yeah. So, what's the relationship like between the two?
The relationship is not like North Korea, South Korea. If that's the question.
No. That wasn't the question at all. That would North be, Korea, South Korea.
All right. We have.
If that's your base.
Here's how I'll say it. We have a relationship with Canada, and then we also have a relationship with Mexico because we share a border with the two places. Right. Is there any similarities between any of those?
Okay. The thing is, we have had our differences, but the differences were between systems. Systems put up policies that oppress our people, but when we fought and got ourselves out, we had to get a referendum for us to decide to be our own side. Yeah.
A referendum.
Then after we had a referendum in 2010. So when we got our country, we are still connected. There are people who stay in Sudan, like South Sudanese that stay in Sudan, and there's Sudanese that stay this side. People do trade business between the two countries. Of course, there's a little bit of racism around here and there, but we're like a sovereign country, and so are they. We share a border, of course. We share oil fields, which is still the problem. We're still fighting over some oil fields because most of our region has the oil, but the Sudanese people want to breach this side. So there's still all that border discussion, but it's good. It's being handled politically. So we really have diplomatic ties in a way that we are even able to sign the agreement here, and we are able to fly over there and discuss anything to do with our politics or whatever. They're always stepping in, and we are like always there for each other. But this all started, I think our ties developed more when Bashir got out of power, because with Bashir we had a bitter relationship.
Did South Sudan leave Sudan because of Bashir? Is that why they didn't want the IS government, that Islamic State? Or am I saying that wrong? Was he part of the Islamic State? That would be ISIS, right?
He was original.
I don't know. I don't know if he had those ideas. Yeah, because I was very young by then. But but we left his government. We left his government oppressed us, and we left his government.
So a big part of leaving was to leave the government, and now the government's out.
Yep.
And so like the relationship's better. I see. It's like people who get divorced, but you know they still hang out and they're kids.
We're still happy that we are being identified because as our own country, because we have our own ways and all that. That we want to respect as our own culture. We have so many tribes, but 64 that are the South Sudanese region. Wow. And that's like our identity.
What's your tribe?
We actually speak Arabic. I'm Dinka. It's the largest in the country.
I'm Dinka. Cool. And you speak Arabic?
Yeah, Dinka. No, it's called Amdinka. It's not called Amdinka. It's called Dinka. I said, I am Dinka.
Oh, I am. Oh, sorry. It's called Dinka. Dinka. Got it.
You got to speak slow for us.
The Dinka trip. Sorry, I got this vaccine running.
The shot. You can blame everything in the shot today. Right, you got to get out of idiocy free card.
I can't think straightly. So
we also speak Arabic as a country. We speak Arabic. We speak Arabic and English. So you can use Arabic or English as an official language. Although English is supposed to be the official language, but most of the people studied in the Arabic system. Our judges, our lawyers, they were in the Sudanese system. Then when we got a country, they couldn't come and use the English here. So they use Arabic.
What's the history with that? Why does everyone speak Arabic? I guess geographically you're close, but what's...
Because it was Sudan. Like the Sudanese speak Arabic. It was the national language then.
Okay.
So we had to learn their language for us to be able to liberate ourselves, for us to negotiate with them in an understanding language. Our leaders need to go through the education system. The education system of the whole country was Islamic, with those Sharia law in the whole region. So we needed to learn for us to get ourselves out.
So what is Sharia law? That's something that people always tell us about in America. Like they say, if this person wins, America's going to become Sharia law, you know? But I don't think anyone, including myself, knows what Sharia law is.
No, it's a little more hardcore in Sudan.
What is it when you actually live there? Now, Kaplan's okay with it. He said we're not supposed to judge. But what is Sharia law?
Sharia law is basically a religious-guided law, Islamic religion, basically. It's quoting the Quran. Like the Quran tells the Muslim people on how to live. and what to do and what not to do. And then these things have stuff to do with the way you dress, the way you cover yourself, all you do and all that. So basically, it's the Quran acting as the constitution.
So in reality, like for you, 10 years ago, if you were living in a country that was under Sharia law, what did that mean for you? What did your day, how is it different from how you live now? Like, did you have to dress differently?
The women are covered. I mean, completely, yeah. Right.
I wouldn't go to a motel with a girl that I'm not married to. I would have to first show my wedding certificate.
Oh, wow.
To take a girl to a motel. I wouldn't be allowed to drink alcohol. I wouldn't take someone's daughter out and hang out.
On a date? You wouldn't go out on a date?
Yeah. You don't take people's, you're heading out. You don't take people's daughters out for dates. This,
as a father of a daughter, this sounds great. I might sign up.
Yeah. So,
bet.
Wow. So how are you supposed to know who to marry? Or is it arranged marriage?
It's arranged, right?
Yeah, it's arranged marriage. Basically, your family meets the family of the daughter, and then they fix something up, and then that's it. You have a wedding. So that's the real law, man.
Can I ask, how old are you?
I'm 24.
You're 24. Okay, so this all ended. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So this all
good
ended
for you.
You were like 14.
Right when you hit puberty. Yeah.
I know. What about all those people who like got an arranged marriage and they just had to marry somebody they never met, and then like 2 months later, country changed. Like, oh, I should have waited.
It's like when you're in jail in America for selling pot, and then like it becomes legal a month later.
Yeah, and you're like, what am I even doing?
This is ridiculous.
It is equivalent to being in jail, having an arranged marriage.
Yeah,
just some dude's daughter to like your dad's friend at work.
They had a great dowry.
You have to marry his daughter.
You know, these things dig like really deep. They didn't all end just after we got the referendum. It just didn't end like that. Yeah, there's still arranged marriages going on. Some of them have been like culturalized. They are more about the culture right now. The South Sudanese, some cultures like do arranged marriages and all that. And there's still a poor perception. When people see you drink alcohol, they steal all that. So it's into the system. There's still a way like this. Even within South Sudan, you can see people, we like to call them Khartoumas. These are people who are so Sudanese than anyone else. The way they speak, what they do, with everything, yeah? So it gets into you. You don't just add it like that. It takes a long time.
It's part
time
of the culture.
Yeah. Yes. Culture.
You don't know how to date.
Exactly. And
you've
they're part
dated,
of
it. So.
Yeah, your parents can't give you dating advice.
Exactly. You have no idea how to flirt.
So for you, But you've kind of grown up your teenage years and your early 20s under a different system, right? So then do you go out and date? Do you and your friends like go on dates? Do you take girls out to the movies or something?
Yeah.
Get a milkshake. I don't know. Do you drink alcohol?
Yeah, I grew up in Uganda, an English speaking country with a lot of the Western culture and all that. So I am more East African than Sudanese. And which is a problem in the country right now, because the country has a mixture of cultures. We have the Sudanese people, we have the ones that live in Egypt, the ones that live in Kenya, Uganda, America, Australia. It's a cocktail of so many cultures and ways of living. And there's so much confusion. You get people getting to fight every single day just because I don't acknowledge the way you address things or the way you do things. Yeah. So I used to go out. I go out, I hang out, do shit, but I don't drink. I used to drink and then I stopped drinking 6 months ago. It's just it's not even a really religious influence decision. I just decided that I want to take a break. So even if I want to drink, I can drink right now. And nobody has a problem with that.
Got it. Great. Yeah, and that shirt you're wearing, most people are listening to this, but you're wearing a very colorful shirt right now.
Not a Sharia shirt.
And you got gold rings on. I don't know how much of this would be allowed under Sharia law.
No, it wouldn't be allowed. And this hair right here, it wouldn't be allowed, eh? I have like very long hair. This is not.
Yeah, you're like dreadlocks.
Yeah, right? Clean up the sideburns.
Yeah, I got.
So they have a haircut policy under Sharia law?
Yeah.
The New York Yankees.
Yeah. Even right now, even within South Sudan right now, like I tell you, man, these things are like so deep. The roots are so deep into people. Like a few months ago, I went to my hometown. I was doing like an HIV/AIDS campaign with some health organization. I went as like an influencer to speak to the people right there and tell them more about HIV, encourage them and all that shit. Yeah. And as I was doing my job, I got arrested and got taken to the police station. And they said dreadlocks are not allowed in the state. And I was like, hey, man, I don't know your state laws. Your state laws have never reached me. And I didn't know that dreadlocks are illegal. But if there's any doctor, so apparently I'm supposed to get an ID for me to have dreadlocks.
You got arrested for dreadlocks.
Wow.
Yep. Yep.
ID? What is the ID? Like a permission slip or something? Like a license?
It's a permission slip. It's a license. So I have never seen what the license looks like. Some soldiers tell me about it, others don't. So I always get into fights with them. Every time I get them, they ask me for that. I'm like, hey, man, show it to me. I don't know what that ID looks like or anything like that. But they steal that. There's some people that they get to cut off their dreadlocks. Then there's some people. Depends on how you all brush off, like the way you vibe and all that. I always sort it out. And I'm lucky sometimes the people are running to know me and know what I do. So they just let me be. But they steal that like those roots of like such laws and all that.
Yeah, the culture's there. It's set.
Yeah. Yeah, it's set, man.
Wow.
Set.
And let's talk. I want to get back into the government stuff, but first, so we didn't even say. I think I forgot to say it, but you have the Juba International Comedy Festival every year.
Yeah.
So how did you get into? I know I was looking you up online. Like you're pretty popular there. How did you? What's the stand up comedy scene like in South Sudan? How long have you been doing it?
Right. So I've been doing comedy for 5 years. I started doing comedy in Uganda. This 2016, okay. And I got my breakthrough in 2018. Like that's when like I blew up. Everyone got to know me, but I didn't come home and like do it like on the ground in South Sudan. There's always been comedy in South Sudan since 2012, but it was like Arabic speaking comedy. But English comedy. I was the first English comedian in South Sudan. So I was doing tours around the world, and I would come back and like around Africa. And I would come back and like do a show in South Sudan, one or two. And I always get people come to my shows because I'm not always around. So I'm only around for like a day and do a show and go somewhere else. So my shows would always sell out and all that. But at the peak of the pandemic, I came back home because COVID didn't hit us like that bad. Like, forget about what you hear in the news. Like, we are really, really good. I don't know what the science is or what the religion is, but I think it's our God and science. We didn't have like so many deaths. We didn't have so many cases. I think it's something to do with our weather. I have no fucking idea. Nobody knows, but we are doing okay. So I came back. We're still doing gigs in the country. We're partying. We're doing everything. And I've been doing some small gigs. I did my special, my 24th birthday special. I named it Two Dozens of Life. I do that. Did that in May. And then
what's the name
I
of
did
it?
A few
Sorry?
Other shows around. Two Dozens of Life.
Two dozens of life.
Yeah, it was my 24th birthday.
Got it.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been doing gigs around and all that. So and then after doing that, I was like, hey man, I need to bring down my homeboys from across Africa. I let them come and experience South Sudan because they don't know what South Sudan looks like. They just hear about it in my jokes and they want to come. They don't know what we have to offer. So I said, that's it. Let me just put up a comedy special. Sorry, a comedy festival, and invite them over. So I write up this concept. I send the concept out and ask some people to jump on and sponsor it. And boom, I had people very happy to sponsor. And then this is it. So I'll be doing it. I think February.
Very cool. And we should say before we move any further, we got to know you through Adam Val Levinson. So shout out to him. He's traveling around
former podcast
Africa right now doing comedy. Kaplan, we got more to get into, but before that, we got to pay some bills here at Kao. So we are part of the World's Smartest Podcast Network. That is Dr. Andrea Jones Roy, Professor Andrew Heaton, myself, and Sir Michael Ira Kaplan. And Professor Andrea Jones Roy has a new show called Majoring in Everything. It finally came out, folks. We've been talking about it for, I don't know, 2 years.
We've been developing it for years. Yeah.
It's been a lot of time in development. It's getting passed around from studio to studio. rewrites. Finally, it's out. Anyway, Majoring in Everything. Go subscribe to that. I think we'll probably both be on there sometime soon. That's on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, Professor Andrew Heaton. He's not an actual professor, but he speaks as if he were at all times.
He should be a professor. He's smarter than most professors, in my opinion.
Yes, so. By a lot. He has the Political Orphanage podcast. He has the Friday Release Valve podcast, and he has Alienating the Audience, which I think is a show about sci-fi movies. I think the idea with that is he used to talk about sci-fi movies in the middle of his other podcast, and he'd get a ton of hate mail.
The people into politics don't want to hear about sci-fi movies, I guess, is what.
Not interested. So he started a whole other podcast for that. So go check him out, Andrew Heaton. And of course us, the Lost in America podcast. Check us out.
Check us out. Watch us on YouTube. Watch our episodes. Yeah. Give us reviews on both YouTube and on iTunes if you haven't done it already. Come on.
Yeah. People. Instagram, all that stuff. Now, Kaplan, a word from your local sponsor. All right, we're back.
Thank you, sponsors.
Thank you very much, sponsors. You really keep the lights on over here. All right, now getting back to this, what's going on with the Sudan? Because it seems like each faction you have the military, you have kind of the people and their prime minister Hamdok, and then you have the what do we call them? The Kaplan, go ahead.
What are you trying to say? Oh, the RSF?
The third group. That's it.
Yeah. Well, I was saying there was, Mohammed Hamdan Dagalo, I believe is his name. He's a warlord.
So my question is, thank you, Cap. My question is, what's each side is being supported by a different part of the world, right? The United States is supporting Hamdok and
Saudi Arabia. I was going to say Saudi Arabia supports the military. What's his name? Do we have a name on him? Burhan, yes. And then in Turkey, Burhan, yes. And then like Turkey and Russia, I believe, support the warlord, I think. So it's
that seems like a very Turkey Russia move to do.
Yeah.
To support the warlord. So how does it seem? Does that make it more dangerous, Akau? Like with all these countries, how much support, when they say these countries support these people, does that mean they're supplying them with money and with arms, with weapons, or what does it actually mean?
It could be anything, like whatever the support they pledge can be anything. It depends on their interest, depends on what they want and how they benefit from it. So they can pledge as much as they can. And most of when you see this Saudi Arabia backing this and then America backing that and then blah, blah, most of the time they actually have no interest in the country. It's just that these are rivalry countries, when they see this happen, they jump to the other side. And Africa usually African countries usually like they say when the elephants are fighting, the grass suffers. So African countries are the grass. We are used for these countries to fight their wars. You see China fighting America over a small country in Africa. It's not about us. It's about them.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know what their interest is really.
Yeah. Is there any? So I know you have oil. Is South Sudan and Sudan both have the same amount of oil, or is it like skewed one way or the other?
No, the South Sudanese region has most of it.
Got the oil.
Okay.
Yeah, but there's an agreement for all of us to be able to benefit. I don't know how that agreement like
it's
worked
part
out.
Of the independence, but probably. It made sense. Yeah.
Something was worked out in the independence period.
But how did the power sharing exactly work? You know, because it seems confusing to have, you know, a military guy. Because like, you know, a few years ago, Sudan made peace with Israel and America reduced their sanctions. And negotiating? Yeah. Like who negotiates something like that? Is that the prime minister, Hamdan? Is that done by this guy, Burhan? Like how do they work together? Like,
no,
how
it's
they,
a-
yeah.
The prime minister is the one that runs the business of the country.
Okay.
The position of a president in this spot is like a pictorial position or a ceremonial position. Hamdok is the civilian, and then he was in good terms with all these countries that had war with Sudan. So he was the one who was able to negotiate these terms and like to initiate these relationships, not a general that was there in the past 30 years and all that. Yeah. So all these agreements or all these peace talks depended on him. And that is why you see that it's important for him to stay in and like keep up all of these things. So he runs the day-to-day life of the country.
Okay, cuz we were reading that some of the protesters were like almost thought he had sold them out by agreeing to come back to government, but you're saying he's still going to have like he's still going to be in charge ultimately making these big decisions until those elections. you think?
Of course, he's still going to be in charge. But what you need to understand is that politics is not as black and white as we expect it to be. Like, we expect it to be just simple, like, get out. Why are you doing this? But again, like I told you, you can't have a country without a military. So the people expect him not to work together with the military, which is impossible.
It's like defund the police. Yeah.
You know what's funny, Cal? That's such a basic point you bring up that we didn't read in any of our research.
Yeah.
Unless I'm wrong, Kaplan, there wasn't a single article we read that said, like, all they said was, oh, he's kind of double crossing his people because he's working with the military. But not a single one was like, yeah, but if you don't have a military, what do you have?
Exactly. Like, there's not an alternate military. You just form on your own.
I mean, and it's my opinion. Yeah, I mean, I don't have the right to tell them how to feel and what to do as Sudanese people. But in my opinion, if my leader did something like that, I would, on top of, I understand them being angry. I would be very angry, of course. But if I sit down, I'd be like, yeah, I think it is what it is, man. I got to understand that politics is not as black and white as we expect it to be.
Yeah. And how's your country? How's South Sudan doing in the last 10 years? In the first 10 years, I guess.
First and last.
How's your government?
it's pretty hard, man. We are discovering a lot of things, and we're being hit a lot. We have been hit by two different wars, civil wars, 2013 and 2016. Yeah. Terrible. Lost a lot of people. And we are currently operating on a peace agreement. A revitalized one, actually. After the 2013 war, we had an agreement. It was breached, went to war again, and then we revitalized it. And we're operating on that until the next elections, which is supposed to be 2023, hopefully. But we are a mess right now. It's a lot of corruption, a lot of deaths, a lot of suffering, poor services. It's a mess at the moment.
And do you do comedy full-time? Like, that's your full job?
Yeah, a full-time comedian.
Yeah.
Yeah, full-time.
And you started in Uganda. What were you doing living in Uganda?
So I was raised in Uganda, and I did all my school in Uganda, my university, everything.
But your family's from Sudan?
South Sudan. Was from Sudan and then became South Sudan.
South Sudan, yeah. And why Uganda? Is that a better life there, a better education or something? Or why would the family...
I gotta say, I mean, because I was born in Kenya.
Really? You just keep adding countries to the story. Yeah.
Just your parents' job moves you around?
I think it was. It was until they couldn't anymore. I was born in Kenya. And then when my dad passed on in 2001, my family said we should come together and go meet the rest of the siblings, my half siblings. So we moved to Kenya where the big family was. This was switched to Uganda where the big family was. And then we stayed up. We stayed there. And that's how I ended up growing up in Uganda.
So you can be a guest, our expert now in like four different countries. This is great. Sudan.
Yeah. I know quite a few about all those countries.
And where in Africa, outside of South Africa, forgetting South Africa, what country is the most developed for comedy? What's the best place to be for comedy?
Kenya is really doing good right now. This guy, Eric, are doing like a really good job. I've toured in Kenya several times. Work with them. They have a very, very good industry. They just built it up from 2018 and it became something like really, really good. I love it. Tanzania is picking up a very good scene, amazing comics, amazing scene. Uganda is also good. Yeah. I'm giving you this in this particular order.
Yeah.
It counts as well. And, Nigeria. So I would put Nigeria in the same ranks with South Africa. They went way ahead of us in terms of comedy.
Okay.
Yeah. But the weird thing.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The weird thing is, some of these countries produce really amazing comedians, but do not have a very, very lucrative industry as compared to the rest. Like, let's say Uganda produces some of the funniest and the best comedians in Africa, but I wouldn't compare their industry to the Kenyan one or to the South African one or the Nigerian one. But when it comes to exporting products, they're really so good. That their comics are really amazing. Like they produced me. I really know.
Yeah, go ahead. Again? Go ahead.
I'm like they produced me, and when I get to see other comics when I travel around, I see a difference. I'm like, oh yeah, I was mentored really well. I really had a very good start. So yeah, that's what I noticed.
And is English the language everyone does it in? The people who tour around Africa?
Yep, English.
Wow. And is Comedy Central there?
Comedy Central, yeah, we have Comedy Central Africa. It's based in South Africa.
It's based in South Africa. Okay. I lived in Asia for a long time. And when Comedy Central came to Asia, they put their base in Singapore. And just because they did that, all the Singaporean comedians were on TV like overnight, like the next day. Because they were there just by chance. They happened to be there. Like all the scenes were pretty equal. Hong Kong, South Korea, Shanghai, Singapore, I mean, Vietnam had a scene everywhere, Malaysia, Philippines, but because Comedy Central set up there, boom, then they were big. They were the first people who were big.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, all these places, all these companies work with numbers, Comedy Central, Netflix, whoever, they work with numbers. So they will set up in South Africa and Nigeria, and they started setting up in Kenya right now. And you will find that almost a lot of films on Netflix are from Kenya or Nigeria or South Africa because they work with numbers, and the rest of the African countries are like left out. So we have to up our numbers or go and put ourselves in those industries and penetrate through the rest of the industries.
Yeah, you have to go like live in one of those places or spend a lot of time there.
Yep.
Try to get noticed. And so in South Sudan, is that where you're going to live? Do you feel like you're going to be living there a long time?
No, man. No, I was just here for the pandemic. I was last year on my way to Melbourne for the festival, and then that's when the pandemic like hit and all that. So I put aside all the things I was doing and went back home. But I'm gonna go back on the road next year. I'm planning to come through to the UK and come to America as well.
Nice.
And then
go to New York.
Then I have to. I want to check out New York, man. I've got a friend. I met a friend in 2017 in Rwanda. He's an American comedian. I worked with him, and then he said, "Yo, come through to New York." So I've been trying to like. His name is Julio.
Julio? Okay.
You know?
I don't know Julio.
Julio, exactly.
But there's a lot of comedians here. There's thousands of comedians in New York City. So
I know, right?
And are you going to Melbourne? You going back to Melbourne? Because I actually might be there this year in 2022.
I might come through. It depends because I have a lot of other dates that I'm planning to put together.
Yeah.
If everything meets, then I'll come through. Then if it doesn't, then I have to extend to the end of the year.
Yeah. So for Sudan, for this, what's the best? What will be the best outcome for the government?
Will there be elections? Do we think it's going to happen on time? Like,
I mean, they have tested the people of Sudan enough. They can't test them anymore, and they have to go through elections. For now, they're just going to lead to the elections because they know what they're capable of. They know how determined they are to get what belongs to them. So I really believe, and you gotta like give it up to them, man. Like they have shaped. They've taken charge of their country and shaped it. So they're directing their leaders to the elections, and it will be elections.
That's great. So you think the people are in charge?
They are in charge, man. Man, I've seen these people, bro. I've seen how active they are on Twitter. I've seen how they discuss this every day. They talk about this every day. Like they are really in charge, man. Very in charge.
It's a great point because like we've been reading like all these things about the military, there's so many military people in the government now in these different councils, and people are saying that's a bad thing, but you're making an interesting counterpoint that like the people on the streets keep winning out. So they're not going to put up with too much nonsense. So eventually hopefully democracy happens.
Yeah.
You're right. So
yeah, the end game is elections. And by the way, things look like, they're going to go to the elections.
Wow.
And do you think it'll be the same people running, or do you think there's any other, like, will it be this guy Hamdok as the main guy, or are there other people that you know of? Like,
yeah, of course, like it's a democratic thing. Like anyone can run. And, So it will now depend on them. They'll weigh their options.
I would vote for anybody who allows dreadlocks, but that's just me.
No. Yeah. Well, I was going to ask, is it difficult to do comedy in a place like South Sudan, where even though the Islamic dictator's gone, the culture is still there? Does that make it difficult?
Nah, not really, man. It's all about, I mean, I've done gigs in so many places. Yeah. And, It's the same. You're either going to die or you're either going to make it. Like I always say, the thing about being a comedian is that you go on stage with only two options. There's no third option. There's no in between. You either bomb or you make it out. So it's the same thing. Yeah. It doesn't get worse, yeah, or it doesn't get any better.
Yeah.
It's just about, you know, just about you knowing where you're going to work and relate, put your material down to the ground, like try to pinpoint the things that you're supposed to address, and stay out of controversial shit, man. Don't be out here getting into people's businesses, and yep, then that's how you get hated for no reason. Yeah,
agreed. And
Oh,
tell us the Luol Deng story. So that's on your Twitter page. I think maybe we'll end
you have a great Twitter bio. We should say.
You have the best Twitter bio I've ever seen in my life. Says your two main credits that you put on your Twitter bio is that you have followed back by Luol Deng,
who's
which is great. He's a South. Is he South Sudanese? Is he from South Sudan?
Yeah, he is South Sudanese.
Yeah, so he's a South Sudanese basketball player. You all know Chicago Bulls.
Went to the Duke.
Legend. Went to Duke. Yeah. So he follows you back on Twitter. That's one of your major American people put their Twitter credit is like, oh, you've seen me on HBO or Comedy Central. Yours is like followed back by Luol Deng. He follows you back on Twitter. And you almost went to the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
But then coronavirus happened, yeah, right?
Those are the two best credits I've ever heard in my life. I almost went to a comedy festival and this former basketball player follows me on Twitter.
I almost went to prom and no.
So have you met Luol Deng?
Yeah.
Is he a hero? He must be a hero.
Yeah. Oh man, he's a hero, bro. He has done a very, very good job with the South Sudanese basketball team. He created a basketball team from scratch, like from nothing. Like he has never played for South Sudan. So when we created the country, he just came back and said, hey, I need to put this thing together. And he got a bunch of boys across the world who barely identify as South Sudanese because they were raised in Australia, America, Uganda, and all that. So he brought them back and like tried to give them the identity of playing for their country, like having the flag, bought them the jersey, the South Sudanese jersey. For anyone to say that I am South Sudanese and all that, he just brought it up there. And he went into the Basketball Federation. He's the president of the Basketball Federation in South Sudan. And he fixed it up, man. He fixed it up like, from way back, from this whole, like I sent you a picture of basketball courts that are named after Manute Bol, who's our legend. Like
I was going
like,
to say, Manute Bol was the ultimate legend.
Yeah, Luol Deng, Kaplan. So you sent me a picture of Luol Deng built basketball courts and named it Manute Bol Court, right?
I love Manute Bol. Rest in peace. Yes, so that's great. Yeah.
Yes, yes. So there is like the Manute Bol Foundation, and then there's the Luol Deng Foundation. And he is like handling these two things and pushing them forward. Like the other picture I sent you was a tournament between Manute Bol Foundation and Luol Deng Foundation. He gets like different kids, like he's nurturing kids that are playing basketball, play a tournament, and the women, the girls also are playing basketball as well. He's like building a lot of things, man, like amazing, amazing stuff. And we respect him for that, man. We respect him for that. Like imagine you know, in 2020, was it 2020? I think January 2020, yeah, we had never had a basketball team. And then the next thing we just hear is like, hey, South Sudan's basketball team is playing in Kenya. I'm like, oh, cool. What are they doing? All right, so we go, we just see on social media, first game, these dudes win. You're like, what? You guys are winning? Like second game, these guys are winning. We're like, what the fuck are these people? And then third game, the next thing I realized, my brother is actually playing in the team. I'm like, dude, when did you
your
get
brother?
Wait, your Australia? Brother's on the team?
Yeah, my brother's in the team.
So is your brother Bol Bol?
Is it open tryouts?
No. But my brother is called Makuri Pondag. He lives in Australia. He's a basketball player as well.
Oh wow.
So I am watching these guys and the whole of South Sudan like came together. People started setting up TVs in the neighborhood to sit and watch these kids.
It's like a movie.
We've never seen these kids. It's like a movie. You've never seen these kids, but these kids are balling, man. They're seriously beating every team. All these East African teams that we didn't know about and all that. And then the finals, we lost to Kenya, and we were like, shit, like, we were so hot, man.
You made it to the finals your first year?
Yeah, we made it to the finals. Then we lost to Kenya. And then, so they were picking like the qualifications for the Afro Basketball Tournament. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what happened is the boys said that they were cheated. The truth is Kenya cheated out, but we were pushed to the tournament by a wild card. So we said, cool, we go again to the tournament and we are bowling again, man. We are beating the shit out of people. Yeah. And then we now made it to like the tournament, like the final, which was like a few months ago. Yeah. And this time we get to meet Kenya again. Oh my God, you should have seen that game, bro. We beat the shit out of Kenya, man.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And we were watching all over the world.
What is this, a tournament for, like, Africa?
Yeah, the Afro Basketball.
So Kenya is your big rival, not Sudan? Like, it's not the South Sudan Sudan game is not a good game.
No, Sudan didn't play.
Oh, you're better than Sudan, but, South Sudan.
Yeah, we were actually better. We beat all the East African countries. We beat everyone in East Africa.
Turner, so I looked up who the coach is. Do you know who the coach of the team is, Turner?
I don't know. Who? Wait, Dell Harris.
That would be better. Royal Ivy. Deep. Remember him?
Yeah.
I know him?
He was like Kevin Durant's best friend. So the Knicks hired him as an assistant coach. They thought then they would get Kevin Durant as a free agent.
Oh, that guy? He's like agent guy?
He's like he used to play basketball.
Yeah, briefly. Yeah, yeah. I know who you're Thunder. Talking about. That guy. Oh.
And now he's the coach of the South Sudanese team, apparently. Good gig.
Amazing.
Yeah, man. He's our coach. So yeah, so we lost the tournament. We lost to the number one in Africa, actually. Tunisia. We lost to Tunisia. And Tunisia won the tournament.
Tunisia. Yeah,
we lost that quarter final.
Tough out. Yeah, they're playing tough, tough zone defense, yeah, Tunisia. Tough.
Man-to-man principles.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Wow, crazy. Very cool. And is Bulbul won't play, doesn't play for the team, or he does?
So there was a bit of a situation. All of these boys did not play, like the top guys that are playing in NBA. They didn't play for us. There was a bit of a situation. I didn't understand what went on, but I think they'll be playing the next tournament.
Make the Olympics, they'll play.
Yeah, for sure. So awesome. All right, cool. Akau Jambo, thank you so much for doing the podcast, man. Hopefully everything gets worked out in Sudan. Congratulations on your new country. Apologize for it not being the newest country. My apologies.
Yeah, it was a good run. 10 years is a good run to be the newest country in the world.
10 years is pretty good. Kaplan, I mean, it's
more than we lasted.
Yeah.
Everybody check follow Akau Jambo on Twitter. It's AKAUJAMBO. Type that into Twitter and check
him
out.
Man.
Yeah, of course.
And we got
we'll see you when you come to New York City. Kaplan, go ahead.
I was going to say, we've got like four countries now you're an expert on. So when anything happens in any of them, be by your phone. We're going to be calling you.
We'll be back. Stay by the phone.
All right.
That's it, Cap. All right. What should we do, Cap?
No problem. No problem.
It's time to get lost.
Get lost.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.